Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Get Her in the Game, a pitch podcast hosted by myself. My name is Dee Dee, and I go by Dust Daughter on Twitter.
And me, Olivia, I go by Sportifica on Twitter.
And we're here to talk about episode 2 of Pitch, called The Interim. But before we get to our recap, let's get into some pickup pitch campaign news. There was recently an article in the Hollywood Reporter where the season one finale of Pitch was explained, and we got a hint as to season two plans. So if you want to have something to read and, you know, have a little cry about, just go to the Hollywood Reporter and check that out. And in more campaign news, the Pitch Street team is no longer pursuing MLB Network as a potential new home for the show. So we're just focusing on Hulu and Netflix, but especially Hulu.
And it does seem like the Hulu people are aware of our efforts. At least some of them are. So that's a good sign.
Yes. My only worry is that with so many other cancellations of really good shows, and especially really inclusive shows, that all our campaigns might cancel each other out, but I'm staying optimistic. I think somebody's already in the market to pick up Underground, so that will leave more room for Hulu to pick up Pitch.
We might just have to create a whole new network or platform ourselves and save all these shows. If only.
I wish, because Hollywood is really making a crap show out of these. The Pitch Street team is also doing a group rewatch of Pitch on Hulu to increase the viewing numbers on the streaming service. And last I checked, they were on episode 3. So we're a little bit behind them, but, you know, hopefully we'll catch up in due time or not.
Keep watching episodes of Pitch.
Yes. Either way, you can watch with us and check out our recap, or watch ahead and, you know, check back with us later. So now we will get into our recap. You want to kick it off, Olivia?
Sure. Yes, our episode opens with more talking heads, like last one. They're on various sports networks. They're all talking about what they like to call gin sanity in San Diego. After Ginny became the first woman to win an MLB game. Of course, there's still criticisms about the speed of her pitch. Colin Coward says that his grandma can throw harder than that, and I wonder if he gladly wrote that himself.
It sounds like something he would say.
Right.
These guys aren't telling her anything that she doesn't already know. She's well aware of her flaws.
Yes. So we see Amelia and Ginny walking into the clubhouse together, and Amelia wants Ginny to guest star on Jimmy Kimmel and do a sketch that they've already planned for her called Ginny Baker's Clubhouse Decorating Tips. And Ginny's immediately, you can see that she doesn't like the idea and she's not really sure about doing it, but Amelia pushes and says that they can talk about it together in Ginny's limo, but Ginny wants to ride on the player's bus and be a part of the team, which is going to be a theme for the entire episode. And it's interesting for Amelia to say, you know, she'll never be one of the guys. But I think what Jenny wants is to just be a part of the team, which is an important thing. And I think that Amelia needs to give her the space to do that.
Yeah, but Amelia's not about letting anybody have any space, especially Jenny.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, throughout this episode, I've thought about, I'm sure there are strengths to Amelia's experience being with celebrities rather than athletes. But there's also, you know, some problems with that too. And I think she should, after 2 years of working with Jenny, which we learned they've been together 2 years now, you know, she should know something about baseball and know that her relationships with her teammates and the managing staff is important to her career as well. I mean, if Amelia is all about Jenny's career, that's a part of her career. So.
I think we're seeing, I think the writers want us to always remember that Amelia is not a sports agent.
Right.
She's used to working with movie stars, and she, you know, when in doubt, she falls back on that experience instead of trying to learn more about sports culture or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
and I guess it does leave room for some interesting clashes between Jenny and Amelia, and, you know, the conversations that they have to have. So it's, I guess, it's good TV. So Jenny's trying to walk through the clubhouse to get to her dressing room, but hey, more reporters and photographers. And Amelia looks on proudly while Jenny is again kind of uncomfortable. And so then we go back to a flashback to San Antonio in 2014.
Oh, yeah. First of all, you saying that Colin probably wrote that joke makes me wonder if Amelia called all those reporters in to block her from her dressing room. Like,
right. Like, how do they?
I mean,
I know there are reporters, you know, before a game and they're talking to players. We see it all the time on Twitter, but like a whole mob, you know, like the cameras flashing, and I don't think that happens a lot.
Yeah, we didn't see them in the clubhouse at all in the first episode. So for them to even know that Jenny has a separate locker room away from, you know, a few feet away from the clubhouse, and for them to know where it is and park right in front of it, I don't know.
Makes you wonder.
Makes you wonder. So, sorry, tangent, but flashback is San Antonio, 2014. Jenny's playing for the San Antonio Missions, and Amelia is seen walking through the rain and mud in this power suit with high heels, which is really not practical, but and she's got this designer bag on her arm, and she's going to see Jenny play. And after the game, Jenny walks off the field. This time it's not with Bill Baker, but with Will Baker, who's now played by BJ Britt. Sorry. So Jenny's complaining about hanging too many sliders and that she doesn't like the new catcher's game calling. And Will kind of encourages her to, you know, play the way that she sees fit. And he tells her that she's the boss. And we'll see that come up later in the episode. So they're talking and having a really cute brother-sister moment when Amelia walks up and interrupts them to offer her services. Will tells Amelia that Ginny already has an agent, which is him. But Amelia is never one to give up. She offers them offers to buy them a beer, and she calls it the most important beer of their lives. Drama much? Drama much,
I
Amelia?
Wish I
drama.
Had her confidence.
Oh, she has all the confidence.
Yeah. So then we go back to the present with Mike, and he's taking an ice bath. And one of the trainers makes a comment about how his knees aren't getting any younger and that maybe Mike should move to first base. But Mike makes a crude joke about getting to first base with the guy's mom, so no need to do that. And the trainer goes away. So that is another theme of the episode is, you know, Mike trying to cope with the fact that he's getting older and that his career will likely be ending in the next couple seasons. And then Al walks into the clubhouse with Buck, and he asks for Mike's help to fix his broken team, because one of the things that we've seen on the TVs and the reporters talking about so far is, so after the flashback, we're brought to the present with Mike, who's taking a nice bath. And one of the trainers comes in and gets more ice for him and tells him that his knees aren't getting any younger and that maybe he should move to first base to take a little pressure off of his knees. And Mike kind of brushes it off with a crude joke, as he's prone to do. And then Al and Buck walk into the clubhouse and they ask for Mike's help to fix broken team, because that's one of the things we've seen the talking heads talk about, is, you know, Ginny distracting the team and how there was a brawl after the game and all that nonsense. So Mike decides to take everyone out to celebrate Ginny's first win. And it doesn't go that well, but
no.
Unfortunately, Ginny tries her best. Out at the bar, one of the players asks Ginny if she's a nun or a lesbian, because I guess they don't know much about her personal life or her dating life. And Ginny says no to both. And I know that when this episode aired, some fans were like, you know, kind of sad that that kind of cut off the possibility of Ginny, you know, being with a woman in the future, you know, because
right.
I think if you know, one of your audiences, obviously, if you're going to have a really attractive, athletic woman as your main character, it's going to be women who love women. So,
yeah.
But I think there was, I think it wasn't a completely shut door. And I know that the writers kind of hinted at the fact that they had plans for, LGBT characters in the future. I can't remember the exact wording. It may have included Ginny. It may not have. But anyways, I loved how Ginny starts to tell this sexy story about a time that she hooked up with a player, and she has, for the first time, her teammates are hanging on her every word. And I love, you can see Blip. He smiles because he knows exactly what Ginny's doing. And it's really funny. She just leads them up until that moment, and she's like, are you kidding me? No, of course not. You guys aren't getting anything.
Like, they shouldn't, like, this night would have gone a lot smoother if those teammates would have just stayed in their lane and minded their own business, because none of the questions they were asking were any of their business.
Right, yeah.
And it's not like, they wouldn't have bristled if she had asked them the same questions. So
yeah. So to make matters worse, of course, there's, you know, these TVs follow Ginny everywhere, and there's a woman sportscaster on TV taunting, you know, in response to the news that there's a brawl after Ginny's game, that she taunts the male Padres players for crying because there's a girl that's getting asked more questions than they are. Of course, the whole team picks up on it and some start leaving. And Ginny immediately hurries over to the bartender to try to change the channel. But then it just opens up to another channel talking about Ginny. And then it turns to another network, not reporting about Ginny at first, but after reporting on a case of a track star who was assaulted in her makeshift locker room by a male teammate, the reporter wonders what Ginny Baker has to say about it, because she is also in her own makeshift locker room, very close to a bunch of men. But then Mike unplugs the TV and gets a round of shots for everyone.
I have questions. I just hear Michael Jackson in the back of my head when stuff like this happens, like, you know, you want to be starting something, because the media always want to be starting something.
Right.
Like they're reaching so hard, they might sprain something to make a connection between two people that, you know, the only connection is their gender and being interested in sports. And all of a sudden, Ginny's got more pressure on her. She's already breaking ground by just doing what she does at the level that she's doing it. But now people want to keep more responsibility and more pressure on her. And yeah. I don't know. It just makes me angry.
It feels very disingenuous, and we'll see even more of that when the reporter confronts Ginny face to face. But you know, it's like under the guise of we need this role model to lead us in this moment. But what they really want is more drama and controversy. And, you know, they don't really stop to consider that, you know, yes, Ginny has this in common with someone else. Then that also means that Ginny has her own, you know, threats to think about and to deal with and everything else that she has to balance. So she's already, you know, going through enough. I mean, why not ask baseball managers and coaches, like, what they have to say about this? How could a baseball coach let this happen? Mm-hmm. You know, how could the adults and the people in charge, the leaders, let this happen? Why does Ginny have to be the spokesperson for this issue?
You know what? Basically ask the men, because they've created this culture where something like this could happen.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. The last person you need to be talking to is Ginny Baker. It's like, you can just see how they're trying to build her into this role model when you know that as soon as they get bored with that, they'll be trying to take her down, because that is the vicious cycle of celebrities in the media. So the Padres are headed on a 3-game road trip, and Evelyn has a little chat with Ginny before she gets on the players' bus. Ginny's worried because she won some people over with the bar night last night, but she lost some other folks too. And she's... You know, but Evelyn just hugs her and tells her that she's driving to L.A. for the game later tonight. And it's just good to see that friendship is continuing after the pilot, and you know, Ginny's got somebody on her in her corner that, you know, cares about her unconditionally.
Yes.
So after Ginny gets her hugs and support and heads off to the bus, Blip starts needling Evelyn, like, did you find it? he's talking about his slump buster, his lucky charm that helps him get out of a slump of bad play. She says no, that the housekeeper might have washed it. Blip freaks out about that. And he says, you know, it can't be washed, or he'll lose his mojo and, won't be able to make it to the All-Star team. Evelyn urges Blip to calm down. She says she'll find the smelly t-shirt and drive it up later.
She's just putting out fires everywhere.
She's Superwoman. Then we find out that Blip's slump buster is a smelly Grandmaster Flash t-shirt that he's never washed. And I think at this time, the Get Down Part 1 had just premiered.
Yeah.
So I was getting really excited that you know, they brought a Grandmaster Flash reference into the show.
Mm-hmm. And two great shows.
R.I.P. the Get Down. God. Yeah. Hollywood is effing up. Evelyn reminds Blip that the only All-Star team that matters is mine, and you're already the leading vote getter.
Aw.
She's so sweet. Mike pulls up to the players' bus in this red sports car with a hottie at the wheel. He gives her a kiss goodbye in front of all the fans that are waiting outside the bus.
What a mess.
He's such a hoe. And then he finally boards the bus, you know, making this snide comment to Blip and Evelyn about Uber.
Yeah.
And
master of deflection.
Yeah, that ain't nobody's Uber, Mike. Ain't nobody trying to kiss the Uber driver after they drop him off. And Blip and Evelyn just give each other the cutest look after Mike walks by. Oh, they're the cutest couple.
You know, I'm so sad that, like, Evelyn and Mike never really had a scene together, like an interaction, because that would have been so great.
Epic. Oh, that's... See, this is why we need a season 2.
Yeah.
You know... Even if we have to get somebody else to play Mike, I don't. Well.
Right, that's kind of, I love MPG, but that's kind of far down on the list of concerns right now. I wish him all the luck in the world, and I'd love to have him back as Mike. But first we have to focus on getting picked up.
Exactly. So he's got to, you know, folks got to work. I understand that.
Yeah.
It's funny that both the Marks have already found shows. Like, Mark Consuelos had a show, but he made being a part of the other show contingent on whether Pitch got renewed. Right. So at least he was loyal, but some of these hoes ain't loyal. Anyway, So Ginny gets on the bus, but nobody wants to sit next to her. They keep putting bags and miscellaneous crap in the empty seat, so she won't sit by them.
Such a bunch of babies.
so petty. And usually I'm here for pettiness because I'm a petty person. But nah, this is just unbecoming and unprofessional. Mike offers a seat next to him. Well, basically kind of orders her with a little pointing gesture.
It doesn't even look back.
He's just like, hey, nobody won't. You wonder if that was orchestrated so she'd have to sit next to him.
Right. Or no one wants to sit next to him because he's grumpy. But
yeah. So as soon as Jenny walks back up to the front of the bus and sits down next to him, he's going in with shop talk. He's got a tablet with game film of the game that she won. And he's saying, you waved me off 17 times last game. That's 16 times more than anyone else this season. So, you know, he's not here for it. He tells her to trust her changeup more and be willing to throw the fastball when he calls for it. He gets a cosign from Buck. which earns Buck the title of genius. Anybody who agrees with Mike is a genius. Mike rants, starts going off on a tangent, and he's ranting about having to go see his ex-wife and go through the extra boxes of stuff packed up from the divorce. But he manages to circle back to the fastball and the waving off issue. And Jenny admits to him that her fastball only tops out at 87 miles per hour and she doesn't want to risk it. Mike tells her to trust him even if she doesn't trust her fastball. And then they go back to watching more game film on his tablet.
It is cool kind of to think about the symbolism of like baseball talk. Like they're talking about her changing up her pitch, trusting, you know, learning to trust her fastball. And as we see later in this episode, you know, she kind of goes against what everybody's telling her to do. And she, you know, makes her own statement. So it's kind of cool to see how what happens, you know, on the field or behind the scenes talking about strategy parallels, you know, everything else that Jenny has to do as a celebrity, as a personality.
And it's also fun. One of the things I loved about this show is that we get to watch this young woman figure all this stuff out. Like, she's struggling with a lot at the same time. And she's, you know, struggling to do it in a way that is authentically hers. And it was just really interesting to watch that journey too. So pick up pitch.
Yeah.
I need more.
So another story going on in this episode is that Oscar and Frank are going over a list of managers to replace Al because they believe that Al has lost the clubhouse. Frank doesn't want to replace a caveman with a caveman. So he says he wants someone fresh and inspiring, as someone like Oscar. And then he says he hired Oscar because he looked like a Spanish Superman. And Oscar reminds Frank that actually he's Mexican. Frank makes a jackass of himself once again.
Always.
I guess it's true to life, you know, because most sports team owners and, you know, those guys way up in the organization usually reveal themselves to be pretty bigoted and racist. So true to life, I guess. And we learned a bit about Al and Oscar's backstory. Al helped Oscar, who was a lifetime 230 utility infielder, become a general manager. Al bought Oscar his first suit and became the godfather to Oscar's child. And Frank responds saying, you can't get too close to employees and you can't make it personal. And this is why he's never invited Oscar to Frank's house. But Oscar calls him out once again. And yeah, Frank's just a jerk in this scene. And I don't like how he puts all of this on Oscar. I mean, I know that this is mostly Oscar's job, but you know, just to kind of leave it to Oscar to get this done. And it's a huge change. I mean, we don't know how long Al has been the manager of the Padres, but you imagine it's been for a long time.
Yeah. And he does it. I mean, to do it in the middle of the season after you've just had this big history changing thing occur in your clubhouse.
Yeah.
And now you just want to turn everything else upside down. Like,
how can you possibly, how's that going to go over well?
Times like this, you need stability.
Yeah. So, to add more problems to the episode, go back to the TV inside the bus. I don't really think it's a good idea to have the TV inside the, you know, team bus. Everybody's trying to get in the zone for the game. But one of the sports networks airs a 2-year-old footage of Al talking about Jenny Baker when she was a AA minor leaguer. And he says that he hopes Jenny makes it to the big show because she's easy on the eyes and a lot of the guys would love to have her in the locker room. Super creepy. And it's especially, you know, troubling in light of this recent event that we've already seen on TV with the track and field assault in Florida. Good old Florida. Always
Florida.
Yep.
So my question is, this video is from 2 years ago. What made them dig this up? Like, I'm sure they didn't remember it off the top of their head. And
right.
Compared to the things that other people have said in the media, this was almost innocuous. It was creepy. I'm not gonna lie. But he could have said a lot worse, especially when you take into account his penchant for putting his foot in his mouth.
Yeah.
Which we'll see later. But it seems like the media was just like, they made that earlier connection was really tenuous at best with the whole, I wonder what Jenny Baker would say about this. But now they're trying to make a deeper link, but it's still coming up pretty shaky.
Right.
Anyways, they want to be starting something, and they did.
At least we got some good reaction, lips, face, and reaction to this clip. It's just priceless.
And Al just barks out, what?
Because he's like playing cards. He's not even listening to the TV.
But yeah, we'll see later. That's his response to, you know, everything anybody gets. If he says anything that upsets somebody else, he'll just bark out, what? What'd I say? Like, in a meeting with Oscar, after they get off the bus, Jenny asks to make a statement supporting Al. And Oscar says, you know, it's not required, but, you know, it would be appreciated. And Amelia takes her away from the meeting. They step aside, and she says she has doubts about Ginny, whether Ginny should support a misogynist who's making comments about her looks. Which is funny because Amelia said earlier, you know, look in the mirror, you're never going to be one of the guys. So anyway, Ginny just wants to be one of the guys, like she said before. And Amelia notes that the guys aren't being asked to make statements. And I would give Amelia a point about that, but neither was Ginny. Ginny offered to make a statement herself because, you know, she wants to be a team player and she wants to support Al. Ginny says that she knows Amelia is just trying to do her job and trying to protect her, but that ultimately this is her life. Amelia says that when she met Ginny, it became her life too, which triggers a second flashback. Back in San Antonio, Amelia's having a beer with Will and Ginny. Amelia basically shows that she's researched Will's business plans for Ginny and kind of just tears them to shreds. To make herself look better in comparison. And basically to get Ginny to doubt her brother. She does this. This is just the first scene where she does that. But yeah, these flashbacks were hard to watch because I really didn't, you know, Ginny and Will seem to be a really good team and they trust each other. And the way Amelia was trying to force her way in, it just felt kind of ugly to me.
Yeah. And it was just kind of, it was sad to watch, you know, Will, you know, he laughs about flunking out of college. He kind of downplays his really great idea to have a little ladies' night at the ballpark. And I wish that Amelia could have, you know, taken them both under her wing. You know, cause she admits that Will had a great idea and he's someone that Ginny trusts. And also their dad just died. And, yeah. You know, it's, I don't know why he couldn't have been part of the team as well.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe Amelia just thought it was easier to do this classic divide and conquer kind of strategy. Yeah. But yeah, this is when I actively started disliking Amelia. And it hasn't stopped. Take it away.
Okay. So, back from our flashback, the Padres are preparing to play the LA Dodgers in an away game. And Mike walks into the gym to find that Ginny's already beat him there. And she says that she's got biology working against her and she needs to work harder. And that's something that we've seen her dad tell her before. And Mike says he's early because he's 36 years old and he's got bad knees. So he tries to keep up with Ginny in a very funny workout montage. Also kind of sexy.
He's totally checking her out. Yeah. And who wouldn't? She's Kylie Bunbury.
Right.
But also, when it was so funny when she went out to get a water bottle.
Yeah, he thought it was over.
And she comes back for round two, and he's like, oh, trying to do these really weak push-ups? Or what were they? Were they squats? Or I forget what they were.
I think they were burpees.
Okay, yeah. But I bet she wanted to bust out laughing because anybody can tell. I'm not an athlete, but I could tell that he was just trying to.
Yeah.
He was barely getting through this. He was struggling.
So after that great scene, Rachel Patrick is the sportscaster who was on TV, the first one to kind of involve Ginny in this track and field sexual assault case. So she's waiting for Ginny outside the gym. There's got to be, you know, some places that the athletes can just be, but no, I guess not there. So she's hoping to convince Ginny to come on her show and talk about the case that's going on. And Rachel tells Ginny she has a big megaphone right now and it would be a shame to waste it. And Ginny tells her that just being on the team has put the manager's job at risk, and her teammates don't want to sit next to her on the bus, and being pressured to talk about a case that's happened on the other side of the country, you know, just, there's already just so much going on in her life right now. And Rachel insists that, you know, Ginny has a responsibility to comment on this because the victim is in Ginny's shoes. But Ginny says, no one's in my shoes. You know, and Rachel also pulls the woman-to-woman line. So Ginny serves it back and says, and woman to woman, screw you for putting that on me. And I'm really glad she said that, because I don't know, this kind of reminded me of just like how we sometimes see like a selective feminism. You can't just pick and choose where it applies. And I feel like Rachel should have shown a bit more understanding to Ginny's situation. And as we talked about before, why does Ginny have to be the only one to talk about this? I mean, why not pressure the Padres and ask them, what are you doing to make sure that Ginny is safe and comfortable in her environment so that something like this doesn't happen in your clubhouse? You know, or how could something like this happen in a clubhouse? You know, Ginny does not have to be the one and only person, you know, to provide answers for this. And she shouldn't have to be the one to provide answers anyways.
Yeah. Ooh, I could talk all day about this, but I won't. So, yeah, but you're absolutely right. To put the onus on this young woman who is dealing with so much already, it just, ooh, it gets my goat. In the clubhouse, the guys play Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper as a way to antagonize Ginny, and Blip calls the guys on it, and they start talking a whole bunch of crap. Yep. And you can tell that, you know, tensions are high because they're losing, and everybody wants to blame it on Jin's sanity. Al walks into Ginny's locker room, which is basically, you know, basically has the opening is this big curtain. And, you know, he asks if she's decent, and she says yes, but he still walks in with this hat, you know, covering his face, so, and not looking at her.
Yeah.
So the whole time that he talks to her, he's got this hat over his face, even though Ginny told him that she was dressed. So Al apologizes for offending her with his comments, and for making her life harder. And she acknowledges that, you know, it did make things a little bit harder with her teammates. He tells her that he has three daughters, and one of them is a doctor and the smartest person he knows. He also thinks she's beautiful, although that isn't the most important thing about her. So he finally gets around to his point, and he says that the world passed him by when they made the internet. And he says it won't happen again, and then walks out telling her to get dressed. And she says, "But I'm already dressed, so was dressed the whole time, Skip." In the next scene, Al reads a statement at a press conference, and then afterwards he asks for baseball questions. And he gets a couple of those before he gets frustrated and says, "Can't we just talk about how pretty the girl is?" So, right after he just extracted the foot from his mouth, he puts it right back in. And everybody gasps in the conference, press conference, and then he spits out, "What?" Like he doesn't even know. He doesn't, there's no filter. There's
Yeah.
he's not thinking about what he says before he says it. So we see the team on the field, and it looks like something out of Bad News Bears. They're really out of sync and playing poorly, and the sportscasters blame it on Ginsanity, of course. The thing was, when they coughed up the winning home run, Jenny was in the dugout. She wasn't even on the mound, so.
Yeah, when are we going to start calling out her teammates for acting like children?
When are they going to accept responsibility for their own mess?
Yeah.
Babies. Later, Ginny tells Amelia to issue a statement supporting Al. Amelia says it's too early in her career to wade in gender politics. I don't see how she can avoid it. And Elliot says he'll draft something tonight, but Amelia tells him not to, and says if Jenny knew what she wanted or what was best for her, she wouldn't need her, meaning Amelia. And yeah, this only increased my dislike of this character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a note about this that.
Oh, it was I already kind of talked about, how Amelia, she almost like boasts that she, nope, still doesn't know anything about baseball, whatever. And I feel like she needs to. She at least needs to understand team dynamics and how, issues like this are just going to keep cropping up if she doesn't, listen to Ginny every once in a while about the thing that Ginny is an expert on. And I think Amelia also needs to remember that, she's working for Ginny. And I think maybe Jenny almost forgets it sometimes. I'm glad that we see her, she asserts herself later in this episode. But, Amelia, I would just like to see at least some more collaboration on this. So, yeah, that was disappointing.
And you think, I think the reason why she's so desperate to control everything is because she knows she doesn't really know much about sports or baseball or team dynamics, like you said, and she doesn't want to learn. After 2 years, she doesn't seem to want to pick up anything.
And it's like she thinks she's better than all of that, but all of that is Jenny's life's work and her career. So, Blip comes home asking Evelyn about the t-shirt, and Evelyn is sorry to say that it disintegrated in the wash, and she tries to distract him, and it works. It's a really cute scene. It was so great to see an established relationship, and they have their ups and downs throughout the season, but it's great to see, you know, just two people who love each other a lot and who make each other happy, especially when so many other things are going on in the show that aren't always happy. You know, that was a cute scene. And although I was kind of scratching my head at, you know, Evelyn saying that her American League crush is Mike Trout.
Why? Why don't you like him?
I mean, out of all the athletes in that league, I think there's some better options, but I trust Evelyn's taste.
Oh, do tell. What are the better options? I know that thing of baseball.
I mean, I don't really know how which players play for which league. That's about where my baseball knowledge drops off. But I was just sure that there will be better options. But Mike Trout actually used to play for the Braves, so that's how I know about him. But
oh, okay.
Because I'm in Atlanta for our listeners. So after that cute scene, Frank, you know, changes his mind after the Padres lost that first game against the Dodgers. Instead of giving Oscar the whole season, he wants Oscar to choose an interim manager by the end of the week.
Ugh. He's so hasty.
And that's just, you know, why not, again, why are we not cracking down on these players? You know, why is he not, you know, couldn't we hold some sort of meeting or something? I don't understand why Frank thinks that finding a new manager is going to make anything better right now. The next day, Mike joins Jenny for breakfast. She has a very delicious looking breakfast, by the way. But she tells
lots
him
of bacon.
That, yes, she tells Mike she's going to do Kimmel. She's going to do the recording that day, and she thinks that she should focus on baseball. She doesn't seem too enthused about the decorating tips idea, and Mike says that she's bigger than the game. And she can't change that, so she should at least use it for good. And from Mike's standpoint, it seems, you know, the good is supporting Al. And Jenny says that she issued a statement last night, but Mike said he hadn't seen it or heard it. So that's when Jenny realizes that Amelia didn't issue the statement. So she confronts Amelia, and Amelia said it would have been bad for Jenny's brand. And Jenny argues that she's not a brand, she's a ball player. They have this, you know, conversation all the time. And Amelia said she didn't travel to bumble-ass Texas for a ball player. Well, I guess Amelia shouldn't have traveled to bumble-ass Texas.
Yes, she should have kept her power suit and her high heels at home instead of trekking through the mud for a ball player.
Cue flashback 3. Amelia breaks down the endorsement deal that Will worked out with a local sports apparel store because she recognized that, you know, if Jenny's career explodes in the next couple of years, she might still be trapped with this local sports apparel store. And Jenny doesn't want to hear the discussion anymore, and so she kind of dismisses herself and starts to walk away. But Amelia turns to Will and she says, you know, you're in over your head. And if you love her, you know, you know what's best for her, blah, blah, blah. And even if Will is in over his head, So is Amelia, because she's not a sports agent. And this is where, again, it would have been I just wish that Will could have been a part of the team. He could have really helped with the sports side of it. You know, we saw in their Ginny and Will's first scene together, they're talking about, you know, Ginny's frustrations on the field, and Will gives her that confidence and says, "You're the boss, you know, assert yourself. You can do it." And I think it would have been great for Ginny to have that balance between these two. I'm sure there would have been clashes, and there are, between those two later in the season. But, you know, maybe in a better universe, Ginny's team consists of Amelia and Will. And maybe that could have been something that the show explored in the future.
Like season two.
Yeah. Yep. So we go back to poor Oscar and his impossible situation. And he sets up a dinner with Buck, the assistant manager, to discuss some things. It's obviously going to be to ask him to be the interim manager for the rest of the season. And do you want to take us to Tragic Mike?
Sorry, that's a good one. Tragic Mike is at his old house going through wedding photos. And then it turns out that his ex-wife is the lady we've been seeing on the TV screens all episode, Miss Rachel Patrick. He asks her to cut Baker some slack. And I love that he's, you know, the reason that he asked her to be there when he picked up his stuff was so that he could appeal on Baker's behalf, on Ginny's behalf. So,
yeah,
shipping it already. It's episode two. He asks Rachel to cut Baker some slack and stop it with the quote unquote over the top feminist stuff. And Rachel is all, you know, Ginny's a big girl and all this stuff. I'm like, she's 23 years old. She may be, you know, she's taller than you and, you know, probably, you know, and more athletic and has muscles and stuff like that, but in terms of maturity, she's still working on things.
Right.
Still trying to figure things out.
But she's been in the league, like, what, a week?
Yeah. So, yeah. So this is where her whole woman-to-woman stuff falls flat, because she's really not even ever trying to put herself or in Ginny's shoes and try to understand her situation. Yeah, so she can really cut the pseudo-feminist crap.
And she could have spun her whole angle to this case going on in Florida as we see more and more female athletes joining, you know, majority male teams. We need to talk more and more about locker room safety, clubhouse safety, and then use Ginny as an example, but you don't have to pressure Ginny to weigh in on it and do that publicly, so then when Ginny doesn't weigh in on it, it looks like she doesn't care. You know, so she didn't have to even approach it like that. You know, she could have sounded more like an advocate for both the victim and for Ginny. But
this is easier.
Yeah, I guess so.
So that takes too much work and thought, and it's just a bit too nuanced. So then he tells Rachel that his body's breaking down and he's not sure how many years he has left to play in baseball. And he wants to know if she would take him back should he retire in the next year or two. Rachel then tells her that she's engaged. So Mike is quick to be like, okay, I unpacked all my emotions along with this, you know, old wedding stuff. And now I'm ready to pack it back all back in. And I'll get somebody to come and pick up this stuff and see you later. Yeah, this is great. This is great. This really helps. So he's out the door. You don't need to tell him twice.
That was rough.
Mike is a mess. He's a mess. He truly is tragic, Mike. That's great. Back with Evelyn and Blip, and Evelyn walks up to Blip with a replica of the Grandmaster Flash t-shirt from the exact same concert in 1982. She found it on eBay and drove to a different city to pick it up. Then she stopped by her mom's house to make sure that the t-shirt smelled like her pot roast. So she's officially the best wife ever.
Yes. She's a hero.
Jenny gets ready to go on Kimmel. She's in the dressing room there. Amelia tells her to be herself and to do what she's comfortable with.
The words feel kind of flat at this point.
Yeah, I was kind of chuckling, like, really, Amelia? This is when you want, of course you want her, you know, to be herself when she's on national TV, being a brand and not a ball player.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like you said earlier, you know, one of the great things about this show is watching Jenny. And it's great that you point out that Jenny is, you know, still a young adult trying to figure things out, even without all of this popularity and baseball. So it's, you know, in the first two episodes, we see Mike say to her, do this for you. And we see Amelia say, be you. And we also have Will saying, you're the boss. So, you know, it's like this season, and I guess the entire show could have been about, you know, Jenny really believing in those words and figuring out what that means and taking control of her life. Because, you know, before Amelia started taking control of her career, it was her dad. And so as she gets older, she's starting to find things on her own terms. And when she does that, those are the best moments of the whole show. And I was just so glad that we got to see so many of them, and it just felt really authentic, and it really felt like the writers, you know, cared about Jenny, which unfortunately feels rare these days. So,
yeah.
Pick up, bitch.
Pick up, bitch! We get another flashback with Will and Jenny. They're walking into a game and they see a sea of fans holding posters that read, I'm next. And we can see Amelia in the crowd holding one of these posters as well. Will says that Jenny should sign with Amelia. And Jenny says that she doesn't trust Amelia. She trusts her brother. But Will says Dad would have been so proud of her. And, oh boy, this is when the waterworks come out. This got me very verklempt.
This is like one of those, you know, go on without me type scenes.
Yeah. Those mess me up too.
It just hurts, like, you know, imagine being in Will's position, like, the second that he showed no interest in baseball, just as a young kid, you know, his dad was like, all right, on to Jenny. And you just feel for him, you know, and he recognizes it again that, and he and Jenny were excited about the way that things are going, and it's just sad. I mean, I'm sure that Amelia's connections and know-how did help her gain notoriety, but it is just a shame that, you know, that they had to part ways like this, especially with them both still grieving. You know, I'm sure they needed each other. So we go back to the present, and just before Ginny goes on stage, Amelia asks if they're good, and Ginny doesn't answer and just goes on stage. So I guess that answers that. and Kylie is just amazing in this whole scene. You know, how visibly uncomfortable Ginny is, and she's just trying to find her own voice and the courage to use it, you know, the best way she can. And that's true to her. And so she starts, you know, saying that I'm just a 23-year-old with a high school education. How did I end up with a bunch of microphones in my face? Everybody wanted my opinion. And I'm sure that, you know, that has to speak to a lot of athletes. Suddenly being asked to comment on things, you know, that they may have never even considered before. And then you think about how their comments are picked apart nowadays nonstop on TV. And she says that she feels like she's making a statement just by existing, just being there. And then she says, so why not make a few more? And then it's a great, to kind of interweave these scenes of Ginny on Kimmel, and then Mike just, he's had it. He's gets fed up in the clubhouse. And he gives one of his famous speeches. I love when they do this, when they kind of parallel each other. So he starts going off on his teammates. And he, you know, he's telling them, Ginny works harder than everybody in here. You're all a bunch of schlubs. I gave my life to this game, and these are my last couple seasons, and you're giving me this, you know? And I'm just like, yes, Mike. And as he's doing that, Ginny admits on Kimmel that her manager said some stupid things, but there are bigger things to worry about. And she brings up on her own the track and field assault case in Florida. And she says, a woman's not responsible for her own sexual assault because she went into the wrong locker room. That's not only wrong, it's dangerous. We don't need to make sure that every girl goes into the right room. We need to make sure every boy knows it's wrong to rape. And I can't think of another show that's made it this plain and clear, you know, that's taken this kind of stance. I mean, we've seen it, I feel like, hinted before, but I can't remember another show that, like, this kind of moment has happened and it stuck with me the way that this one did. And it's kind of cool to think about, you know, just as Ginny is setting the terms of her brand, her existence, the show as a whole is doing the same thing. Because even though it's a show about a woman playing in the MLB, you know, people are going to approach it with just as much skepticism and criticism as they would if it were actually happening.
Yeah.
And I was impressed that in episode 2, they address something that, you know, male athletes get away with a lot. They receive sympathy when they're in these situations, more so than the victims. And so just as Ginny is making a statement early on in her career, the show made a statement like, this is the kind of show we're going to be. And then one thing that you often hear when something like this happens in the real world, in real sports, when an athlete is accused or there is, you know, undeniable proof of assault, domestic violence, you hear some talking heads say, why don't we just stick to sports? Why can't we just do that? And so this show is showing you, we're not just going to stick to sports here. And so, and they managed to say something more profound and important than, you know, most actual sportscasters are capable of. So that was a really cool moment. And again, Kylie's acting was just so, so good there, like with her voice being shaky and she's like, you know, trying to take deep breaths and speak clearly. It was just a really powerful moment.
It really was. And just the way they made, because they weren't only talking about sports culture, they managed to make to show you how this is really, how sports is really just a microcosm of all of the other, all of the crap that we deal with in the world at large. It's not just sports culture that needs to change. It's the hyper masculine culture in that's pervasive all over the world, and especially in this country. And it's not just sports culture. It's also rape culture that's dangerous and needs to be interrogated. And they just made it really simple and plain about a really big issue that people still find ways to be confused about. I mean, if you go on social media, you'll see a whole bunch of misguided men of all ages who still don't understand how pervasive rape culture is in this society. But yeah, they managed to make it plain in just a few, in one episode, and just and in a few sentences. And I just, yeah, this show can do some great things. And pick up Pitch.
Pick up Pitch, drink, pick up Pitch. I'm drinking tea right now, so it's, it works a couple of different ways.
Yeah. Is it green tea or truth tea, Olivia?
It's a little bit of both.
Then the Padres finally take a long sip. The Padres play their next game, and it looks like they're back to their winning ways. Oscar shakes hands with Buck, and Buck walks into the assistant manager's office where Al is already waiting, and tells Al that, yeah, they want to fire him.
Womp.
Jenny. Womp, womp. Jenny tells Amelia that she'll talk when she wants to talk and say what she wants to say. She tells Amelia, I call you off, not the other way around. I'm the boss.
Amen.
Yes, yes. Pump your fist in the air, yes. So it echoes the words that Will told her earlier in the episode. This time, it's Jenny instead of Amelia that triggers the flashback by asking why a movie agent would come to Texas in high heels to sign a baseball player. So we're in a doctor's office with Amelia and her husband. The doctor gets up and leaves them alone in the office to talk. So we're assuming they just got some devastating news. And we find out that the two rounds of IVF that they've undergone have not worked. And Amelia wants to try again, you know, because they can afford it. But Amelia's husband, whose name is Eric, but you don't need to know because, you know, we're not going to see him again. Eric says he's done. He doesn't like this life. He says kids won't fix their marriage. He says he doesn't want this life anymore, and he doesn't want a life with her anymore.
Then why'd you let her go through two rounds of IVF?
Ooh, see that we're are you seeing a pattern with a bunch of men not wanting to take accountability for their actions and their decisions?
Yes.
I'm sensing a pattern. Go
Yep.
ahead and sip some more tea. So Amelia says she doesn't say anything. She just gets up and heads for the door. And Eric has the nerve to say, "What, you're not going to say anything?" So Amelia turns around and says, after obliterating her life in two sentences, she's not going to give him the satisfaction of seeing her cry. And then she walks out the door. So Eric's a jerk.
Yeah.
I could say other things, but we're trying to keep this podcast PG for some reason. I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
So
So,
we see
okay.
another part of the flashback in Amelia's old office, and kind of she's disinterested in the meeting that's going on, and she sees kind of across the office Jenny on a TV screen playing baseball, and that's all it takes for her to stand up and say she quits. And then Elliot gets his Jerry Maguire moment and says that he'll go with her. I would have loved to learn more about Elliot and why he was so quick to leave too, because it seems like Amelia, even now, she doesn't really show him a ton of respect. So, like, did they, how well did they even know each other at that point?
Well, in the flashback, we see he's like, is he like dumping Cheetos or something like into bowls or some kind of a snack?
Yeah.
He's kind of dumping. So I don't think his role at that old job was very high up. I don't think he got to do anything substantive in his work. So why not go with this lady, and meet this really hot ball player.
Works for
It's not
me.
like he's doing anything great for him with his life. But yeah, go ahead.
Back in the present, Amelia tells Jenny she came to Texas because she knew Jenny needed her, but I think Amelia needed Jenny as well, because fair to say. But then we go back to a bar after a winning game, and people are happy, and I was glad to see Jenny kind of dance with her teammates. And that's another thing I would have loved to see is Jenny just getting more and more friends. I just want to see Jenny have friends and people be happy and make her happy, So it was cool to see her kind of let loose after doing some really brave things and dealing with a tough week. And I just, Mike, like, he, like, it's almost like he couldn't bear to see her dancing with other guys or something, because he just got up and left. And so I think maybe in that moment he started to feel himself like growing more fond of Jenny, and he's just like, nope, this can't happen. So he leaves. And when he leaves, he sees Amelia and he sits down next to her, and Amelia shuts her laptop, which, is a is pretty impressive. So we know where that's going. And that's the end of the episode. And I know that a lot of us weren't exactly happy with Amelia hooking up with Mike. I mean, the two people play this game, so I hope I'm not really happy with either of them doing that. Yeah, so I guess we'll get to that in our next episode, when we actually see them together and this whole charade begins.
Charade. Don't. How do you really feel about it? Oh my God. Yeah. It was a bit of a farce.
Right.
Yeah. It was, I just, I was so, I ship Ginny with happiness.
Yeah.
Over everything. So seeing her at the bar dancing and just being free and just being, you know, a 23-year-old young woman, that was fun. That was fun. I don't know. Maybe Mike couldn't take it because, you know, seeing her that happy. I mean, how can you not fall in love with somebody when they're that happy and, you know, working out all the frustrations of the week and everything. And she acquitted herself beautifully. And, she deserves this celebration. So, yeah, Mike shouldn't have left, but, you know.
Yeah, we could have ended the episode on Jenny happily dancing. I would have been good with that.
Yeah, but, you know, Mike has to be tragic, like you said. So he chooses tragedy. Another great episode. You said like before we were recording that, you know, they pack so much into a show, so much happens. And yeah, I'm surprised that, you know, that it's less, that it feels like, you know, that we're getting an hour, you know, even with commercials. I know with commercials, it's probably like 40 something minutes or something, but these episodes are so packed with goodness.
Yeah. Not a scene is wasted.
Yeah. Cause you always know that the writers are going to circle back to it, you know, by the end, we're going to get you know, what they were foreshadowing at the beginning, near the end of the episode. And it's just, yeah. So that's good writing and being able to handle this many different characters and have them all sound different and, you know, exhibit all of their, shining personalities, except for Frank and, Eric and, and Tommy. And so, it was just, good writing, good acting, pick up pitch. I've already mailed out some posts, some cards, to Hulu and Netflix, and, you can too. Just check out, Pitch Street Team on Twitter and on Tumblr, and they'll have the list of addresses for the executives at Hulu and Netflix that you can write to and encourage them to pick up Pitch. So if you want to talk with us about the show, you can hit us up. Olivia is at Sportifica. I am at Dust Daughter. You can also hit up the Twitter feeds at Black Girl Squee and email blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. So until next time, bye.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
Always.